Ken Daniels is the play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings. And Ken Daniels joins us first out of the gate in the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Hey, you and Mickey Redmi, you got what is this, twin bobbleheads on December 2nd?
We do.
That is solid.
Yes, it's great. I don't know if my hairline was exactly right, but you can't have everything. But, yeah, it's a talking bobblehead, so it's going to have some of his bingo bangles on there and some goal calls. And the nice part is it's going – they're not giving them away. It's part of a Red Wing ticket package, so there's a limited number whether you buy lower or upper bowl seats. And we're going to autograph some, and it's it goes to my son's foundation. I lost my son, Jamie, December 7th of 2016 in the opioid epidemic in America,
right,
around the world. And part of the a portion of the proceeds are going to my son's foundation. And we are in the process, besides the bobblehead night, there's going to be an annual Jamie Daniels celebrity roast. My son loved to laugh. And there's going to be a dinner for Mickey. We're roasting him. We'll be the first roastee September of next year. So the proceeds going to my son's foundation. And our goal, Jeff, is to build a long-term recovery home here in Southeast Michigan, just like Scott Oak has done such a wonderful job in tribute to his late son, Bruce, in Winnipeg. So that's what we're looking to do, and we're going to get it done. The dinner is going to be fantastic, and Doc Emmerich's agreed to emcee it. And your man, Jim Ralph, is going to be one of the main roasties, along with Scotty Bowman and Mike Babcock, and it's going to be terrific.
Oh, it's a great cause, and it sounds like a great night. And you know, you're absolutely, I mean, anything we can do here to help you, I'll let us know. And you're absolutely right. It is someone who still has family in parts of rural Manitoba, rural Canada. It's the epidemic that we need to talk about, quite frankly. That's about
it. You know what? You hit it bang on, Jeff, and we won't spend a lot of time on it, but it is, you have to talk about it. It's the shame and the stigma, and we were no different. And my son went to Florida, was clean for 7 months until, you know, he got scammed in an insurance bit. But that's all another thing. He got taken by unscrupulous people. But we need to talk about it. We can't hide behind it. If it's not happening in your home, and thank goodness it's not, it's happening two or three doors down, because the numbers show that 200 people die a day. We lose one person every 7.5 minutes. Think about that. That's you know, every day, that's like a jumbo jet flying into a building. That's how many people are losing to the opioid addiction every single day. And if you've got pills in your home, get rid of them. Don't leave them lying around. Dispose of them properly. The Vicodin, the Percocet, everything else that you don't think someone can get addicted to within 3 to 5 days, my son did. It's got to go.
Well said, Ken. Let's talk a little bit about the Red Wings. Really no easy transition from that topic. But what are the Detroit Red Wings? And I was thinking about this driving in today. I can remember, obviously, Detroit and Toronto, Red Wings and Leafs, original six, big rivalry. What are the Red Wings right now? And what do they have to do, or how far along are they, Ken, in getting back to where, you know, gosh, I mean, I grew up, well, a lot of us grew up sort of watching the Red Wings be one of the dominant franchises in the NHL. How far away are they from getting back to that?
To be a dominant franchise, realistically, Jeff, I'd say 7 to 8 years, 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
You think that's a long time, but I defy anyone, and we'll take Vegas out of the equation.
Right.
But how long has it been since Montreal Canadiens won the Stanley Cup? 1993.
Mm-hmm.
How long has Winnipeg been in this rebuild where they're now an elite team?
Yep.
They haven't. When did they draft Mark Scheifele? Wonderful pick. And others. But they also got Patrick Laine in the top three in the draft. And how long has it been for them? They haven't won yet. Nashville's had great youngsters through the years. Haven't won. Just look through how long Columbus Blue Jackets have made the playoffs two consecutive years for the first time in their history. They've been around 20 years. They had the first overall in Rick Nash. How long have they been rebuilding?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not easy. So 25 years, the fans get spoiled. They miss 2 years and will miss a third consecutive year for the playoffs, but they're doing the right thing. What they tried to do the last few years prior to the last couple was to ignite the last years of Henrik Zetterberg, Pavel Datsyuk, who left earlier than he should have, but his move to Arizona also brought the Red Wings two picks and Dennis Cholowski and Philip Hronek, who are going to be mainstays on this blue line for years to come. that's what happens, is you try to give those guys in the room the pieces to sustain what they've got, give them one last kick at the can. If you're realistic about it, the rebuild should have started probably 4 or 5 years ago, but you don't do that. So now they're in full rebuild. And, you know, to be, if you get lucky in the lottery, like Toronto did with Matthews, and let's face it, like Pittsburgh did, and Chicago won the lottery to get Patrick Kane, and then you get Taves. So that certainly speeds it. You've got to be in the top three in the draft and get that elite star player to truly speed up the process. And even then, it's 5 to 6 years. So anyone who thinks a rebuild isn't 5 years, 6 years just to be there, you might do it 1 year and be gone, but to sustain it, it's a long time.
Hey, you know, it's funny, as you were talking, I look at the Red Wings and it almost seems to me to be a similar case to what we saw with the Toronto Blue Jays, you know, the decision this offseason to not trade Josh Donaldson, to sort of take one more kick at the can. And it's, you know, it's, I think it's a hard... It's a hard river, or it's a difficult river for management in any team to cross, to sort of make the call and say, yeah, you know, we just, this, it's not going to happen this year. Because especially when you get conditioned to it the way the Red Wings have, like, I don't necessarily look at it as a fault of management or anything. I just think sometimes stuff doesn't line up. Your contracts don't line up. You know, you're going into a new arena. I mean, you like to sort of be competitive. Like, there's so many things, so many factors at work here. I think we underestimate how difficult it is to make the decision to pull the plug on a franchise that has gone to the playoffs for a prolonged period of time. We really do.
For sure.
It's not that
That's
easy.
Exactly what happened. No. And they wanted to keep that string going, 23 years, 24 years, 25 years. You could see it going. After Nick Listerman retired, you could see it going. But, you know, and then you lose Datsyuk, who signed the deal and left earlier than he should have and put the Red Wings in a huge bind. And then Franzen gets a concussion. And then Zetterberg's on his last legs. And it's getting older, but you kept trying to continue it because, as you say, you're moving into a new building. You don't want to go in a new building with the team in dead last in the league. So you try to continue it on, and then you get to the new building, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're in the midst of a rebuild. So the timing, I don't know how many have done it exactly right. I think, as I've said before, I think even when Brian Burke was there years ago, maybe Toronto was ready for the rebuild then, but they made some deals, and Phil Kessel, and a great player. I think knowing, having done Leaf Radio in the past and growing up in the Toronto market till I was nearly 40 years old, I think I sensed the market that even that time when I looked at it and was talking to my friends lots in Toronto, they were ready for a rebuild then. Yeah. They were. I think the fans wanted it. Let's go now. And then that didn't happen. And then when Mike Babcock came in and said there's going to be pain, fans were going, oh, okay, I can handle the pain. It's about time. And I think here fans are getting used to the same thing. They're okay with the kids, and I think they're ready for the rebuild. They want to see it now with kids. And if you're getting, you know, you're not winning halfway through this season being somewhat competitive, the one-goal games and at least in games, and I think this team will be because they've got a good group. The fans maybe get tired of the kids. Send this guy down. Bring this guy up. Send this guy down. Bring this guy up. Well, you just got to be patient. You're in it now. Just embrace it. Go with it. I think Toronto did it. And then they got lucky and they get Austin Matthews in the draft. Because believe me, if Toronto didn't get Austin Matthews in the draft, do you think they'd be where they are now?
No.
Would Tavares be there now?
No.
So, you know, so
yeah,
that,
I think
you need some luck too. Chicago got Kane and Taves. Pittsburgh got Fleury, then Crosby, then Malkin. The Capitals get Ovechkin. And look how many years it took. Was it 13 or 14 years before Ovechkin won?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first pick. And he had great players around him. So... It's just how it goes. Fans got to be patient. It takes time. Take Vegas out of the equation. It takes time.
You mentioned Dennis Cholowski. He, I believe, will not be playing tonight. He has an upper body injury. I'm just looking at this team. I mean, bad enough you're trying to do what the Red Wings are doing. You don't know Trevor Daley, Jonathan Erickson, Mike Green. Now Cholowski's out at least for a couple of games. Nicholas Cronwell does come back. I mean, that's the other does come back tonight. After missing the first three games of the season, that's the other aspect of this is injuries, right? If you're trying to do what the Wings are trying to do, you literally cannot afford. You can't afford injuries in the salary cap. And I mean, I'm when I use the word afford, I'm talking about it from a financial point of view. You literally can't afford to have players hurt.
No, but it does afford the youngsters an opportunity. And that's the great thing. So we're seeing Libor Shulak, who's a free agent defenseman, very good skater and a big body. So we're seeing Filip Hronek. We're seeing little Joe Hicketts at 5'8", who's got determination and heart the size of a lion. It's unbelievable. And then you see Dennis Cholowski, who maybe you wouldn't see. And up front, you get Christopher N, who made this team. You got Michael Rasmussen. They send back Filip Zadina because he's just not ready, although he was the sixth overall pick, and the Red Wings think they got a really good one. So to me, again, if you're going to embrace it, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Play the kids. You're going to see kids' mistakes, and we've seen them already, and we've mentioned it a number of times in the broadcast. It's okay, though. It's going to happen, and yet they've been competitive two losses in extra time and one in regulation, and the game against Los Angeles, they should have won that game. They outplayed the Kings. So those are little things you just look forward to seeing, to see Dylan Larkin, to see Tyler Bertuzzi, to see Anthony Mantha, and they're going to be the future of this team, and Michael Rasmussen in time. So to me, I don't know. I'm embracing it. It's fun. Will the games when they lose 7-1, and that could happen tonight with this juggernaut Leafs team that's coming in and scores a rate of 5 goals a game? Yeah, that could be a little bit disheartening, or they might surprise you. So me, when I go in to call a Red Wing hockey game, who knows? You're just seeing the kids' progression, and maybe something great happens. And if not, it is what it is. No one's expecting playoffs.
Ken, you'd be the perfect guy to ask this, because one of the things we've noticed here in Toronto with Mike Babcock this year is, and again, it's early days, but there have been some games, led in 5 goals, the Montreal Canadiens, one of them an empty netter, led in 6 to Chicago, yeah, you win. Kind of get in a shootout with Dallas, you win that 7-4, but you know, 4 goals against it. There used to be a time here in this city not too long ago, a couple of years ago, where Mike Babcock would have taken the opportunity to say, yeah, the 2 points are great and everything, but my God, we can't win giving up 6 goals. We can't, you know, 5 goals, I mean, this is just not good enough. We get the Babcock line about, gee, I don't know, you know, I looked up and it seemed like the puck was in our own net all the time. We used to get that. We're not getting that anymore from Mike Babcock. Was there a time when he coached the Red Wings where he kind of changed a little bit, Ken, and just sort of, it's almost like he feels, okay, I can give these kids, these guys, the keys to the car enough, and if they stay out a little late, as long as the car is back in good shape, I'm okay with it.
To a certain extent, I saw Mike work the group for 10 years. I was with Mike Babcock. I really don't know how much he's changed. He's still the most driven individual, an intense guy I've ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, though, he also knows within that room when he's got Tavares, and I'll still call him Tavares. I don't care what he says. So, you know, when he's still got Tavares, my goodness. He's still got Tavares in that room and Austin Matthews and Patrick Marleau. And there's a reason why Matthews didn't get an A. Besides him not being signed yet. He knows the leadership group in that room and Morgan Riley. He knows what he's got. If he can stay out of the room, at certain times, he will. And if it's not getting done, he'll be right in there and in their face. So he'll protect some. I noticed the other night, the great night, the win over Dallas, how, you know, what a terrific evening, once again, that both Matthews and Tavares had in this post-game news conference. Mike didn't mention either one.
It was a lot of Zach Hyman.
Yeah, there's always a lot of Zach Hyman.
Mm-hmm.
And I called Zach Hyman's games at Michigan that year when he was on a top line with Dylan Larkin. And I always thought when he was in Florida, boy, I would have loved to get Zach Hyman. And when I spoke to Red Berenson at the time, I said, Red, what's Zach Hyman going to be in the National Hockey League? He said he's going to be a really good, strong third-line winger. He's going to be terrific in a third-line role. Well, now he's up to a first- or second-line role, but that's the head coach. Mm-hmm. But you know what? He does do the grunt work that a lot of guys won't want to do. Pavel Datsyuk loved having Justin Abdelkader, and Abdelkader never had a bigger year than when he was with Pavel Datsyuk. So there are guys who just work with guys like that. But, you know, Mike loves those types of players like Hyman, and, you know, it's funny that he would like Kapanen to be like Hyman. If I'm Kapanen, I'd like to be more like Marleau or Marner. However,
yeah.
You know, there might be some of that in there too. But, no, if things aren't going well and the defense isn't playing and they're winning games, there's only a matter of time, because when you're winning games the way that the Leafs win games, sometimes I believe it's tough to get the buy-in defensively because you've got the 2 points and you keep going. And at some point, it's going to come back to bite you in the rear end. And that's when I think Mike Babcock will say, okay, enough of this. You're winning big, but now this is ridiculous and we lose a couple. And that's maybe the best lesson that he's waiting for to show the guys, this will be the proof. You got your doors blown off. You think you can win every game this way? No, you can't. Now let's go. So knowing Mike from the 10 years that I know him, I think that's what's going to happen. It may be a while before that happens.
Yeah, it's almost like he's just kind of laying in waiting for the next lesson to be delivered.
Yep. Yeah, I think so.
I wanted to ask you about the story. Normally, I wouldn't get all that carried away about this, but you know, the story out there that the Wings, that they're changing the colors of the seats in the arena as a means of the conspiracy theorists are saying it's a means of sort of disguising the fact that the seats aren't always full at Red Wings games. You know, look, I've watched Red Wings games on TV. I've seen empty seats. But I see empty seats in a lot of places other than Detroit. Is that an issue though? In Detroit, is attendance and interest an issue? And you know, will the fan base handle this rebuild that we're about to see?
Yes, I think the fan base is handling it. I think the fan base wanted it. I think the fan base is ready for it. Whether they're ready to show up every night and see it in person, I'm not so sure. But I do know the season ticket base in the lower bowl is pretty much sold out, whether it be corporate or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they always said, you know, they're up on the concourse. And it is a beautiful building, and it is a great building to watch the game. But I will say, and does the red show more brightly when they're empty? Yes, it does. And I can't say not everybody's there, because there are many there, and I've been there on games that we don't do, and I've been in the seats and I've seen it, even for preseason. But the changing of the color of the seats was also part of the retrofit when the Detroit Pistons came in to join the Red Wings in that building after the fact, because they did a $25 million retrofit to the building where even the elevators had to be made bigger because the Piston players were in. There was no dressing room for the Pistons. That had to be done. So not only elevators were made bigger, the urinals were made taller. In the dressing rooms, they had to change everything. You know, there's a lot of things going on for $25 million, and part of that, what they also wanted, I think, was a different seat coverings, because the Pistons last year put a sponsored seat covering in black over the red seats themselves. So I think all of this is in part with the Pistons and the retrofit. I don't think it's just because of the seats, but I haven't heard that it is. And you could go what the Met Center did in Minnesota. You could have green, blue, yellow.
Yes.
That's how they remember they used to disguise the old Met Center as empty seats.
So, exactly.
You know, wouldn't show up so much. So I don't know. And they do tell me that the black puck off the black seats shouldn't be a problem. We were in Anaheim the other night, and they have those dark burgundy seats in Anaheim. And I looked down, and at both ends, the seats were, both sections were in black. And I said, what are they doing? They said, oh, we're changing the whole lower bowl to black seats. So
Ken, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much, man. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Jeff.